guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
If Peter Chiarelli were still here, what would that Zdeno Chara contract look like?
3 years, 15 per.
That's what we said. To me, I think not 15 per.
15 total, yeah.
I don't know. Don't put it past him.
Instead of 1 at 5, I think that would have been 3 at 13 or something like this. So thank God Peter's not here to overextend. And, you know, it would have been 3 and 13 with a full no movement. Don't forget that. The Zdeno Chara, I'm glad that we signed him. I think he earns it. I think he earned it this year. I think he looks better this year than he has in the last couple. I like him more and more every single day that goes on. I like him more. I see his value. He feels more like a captain to me every day that goes forward. More of an elder statesman, more of a role guy with oozing with leadership and intangibles and like all that. I'm all in on Chara. I'm glad they signed him. I love it's 1 year. I think it's a slight overpay, just a smidge. He was $4 million this year. Or that was his cap hit, or was his salary and his cap hit? Whatever. I think he was 1 year, $4 million this year, which I would have liked to see them keep. Like I would like to see them on a series of rolling 1 year extensions for $4 million. So they gave him 5 plus incentives, which is feels a little much, but I'm not going to complain because it's 1 year and not 3, which is why I think we would have gotten under the old guy.
No, I think they're doing it the right way. I mean, if he looks like he has looked like this year, then you give him another year. And the good news is, it feels like obviously Chara's on board with that. And if you're in the same spot next year, you do it again.
All right. And that's right. It should be a series of rolling 1 year deals as long as he wants to do it. And he looks right, like he can do it, and boom, there it is. That and all your phone calls from today. Dan in Providence on Johnny Manziel. You want him?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's not really a high risk. Real quick, I wanted to just want to bring up another caller earlier. Our time as a dynasty is over. Like, boo-hoo. It's like Hugh Hefner crying at the end of his life. Like, oh, what happened? Just be thankful you got the time you did. Anyway, for Manziel, I don't see what there is really to risk. I mean, especially if you grab him and then draft a QB in the second round or whatever it is. He has the physical ability. Obviously, tweaking is needed, and playing behind Brady is perfect. Plus, behind Brady, there's no pressure on him. You have that kind of shadow with a star, you know, taking the microscope off you. And the other thing that I think is unfairly overlooked is this isn't just a guy who was a partier. He gets the label because, you know, he was the darling at Texas A&M, but this is a guy who's been suffering a serious mental illness that he's finally come to terms with. And bipolar is not just something you sweep under the rug. And you look at guys like Brandon Marshall, or the receiver on the Eagles who had anxiety, like how much they've improved after, you know, they have these situations sorted out. So I think a good system will, you know, fix these off-field. And if it doesn't, it's not like you're going to invest millions of dollars in them.
Okay, so I have a hard time with that second thing because let's not leave out personal responsibility. I mean, Johnny Manziel's responsible for the decisions that he made and the choices that he made with his life and where he went with his life. He's responsible. So, like, I just hate taking that out of the equation. Which makes, you know, so it's not just as simple as medicating him. You know, he still has to do the right thing and want to do the right thing, and his heart and his head have to be in the right place, and that's on him.
Yeah, for most of the last 5 years, he acted like a rich, spoiled a-hole.
Yeah.
Like, don't let him off the hook for that.
You know, what we diagnose that as what?
Rich, spoiled a-holism.
Rich, spoiled a-holism, exactly. So, like, there's that. But the first, what's the risk? The risk is the sideshow. But this place...
No, they do that well, though.
...is the place that's best suited to deal with that crap.
Oh, yeah, nobody can kill a sideshow like Belichick.
Seriously.
See, but this is why... This is another reason why I think that he's sort of... Belichick's the guy Manziel needs. Belichick is hardcore, no-nonsense, commit. And if you have a guy that has those kinds of problems, he needs someone that's going to draw lines and boundaries. Here's the job. Do you want to do it or not? If the kid says yes, give it a shot. Once he screws up, bye-bye. It's over. You lay that out and give it a shot.
So, frankly, I'm not really worried about that piece. I just, can he play in
the
league?
Can he play?
Can he play?
See, I think, I mean, there's ability there. There is. I'm not saying he's Dan Marino, but there's ability there. I don't think he's a complete bum.
Justin has a Bruins thought for us on last night. What is it, Justin?
Hey, Felger. So a lot of Bruins fans are blaming Hudobin for the game, and I just want to say that we wouldn't have been in that game unless Hudobin made all those huge stops in the first period and the second period. I understand the third goal was bad, and people can try and blame him for the 2-on-1, but he's literally in the slot shooting from, like, 10 feet out, and I think he's the best backup goaltender in the league, and the fact that Rask is going to need his rest and Hudobin's playing stellar, getting 32 saves against the Winnipeg Jets, keeping us in the game the whole time. I'm completely okay with that. And
well, I mean, let's just stick to last night. And Maz, you only saw portions of the game.
I didn't see the very beginning.
So, which is why I'm not blaming you for it. But if you watch the whole game, you're not coming out of it saying that Hudobin was horrible. He gave up a couple horrible goals.
I thought three of them were bad. But
the shorthanded one was inexcusable.
The wraparound, when they fight back.
Horrendous goal to give up.
You've fought back. You've gotten the call. You've on the power play. You know, that 5-on-3 is about to expire. You get it. With Pastrnak, you tied at 3-3. You've come all the way back, and then you give up that wraparound. That's the one that cannot happen. You also can't get beat by Joe Morrow from 40 feet.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
So I didn't like all four of them. If you want to know the truth, even the 2-on-1, that one. Look at where he was.
Yeah, he was not square.
Holy crap, was he not square? He was practically in the penalty box.
I'll just say, I have no life. This is, I'm not on TV anymore. I got to watch it. I watched all 70 minutes of that hockey game last night. And if you watch the whole game, you're not saying that Hudobin was horrible all night. He kept you in it to start that game.
He was good in the overtime, too.
And he was great in the overtime. That's right.
Yeah, I didn't love even the controversial goal.
Well, again, you're negative by nature.
Yeah, that's true.
You're right.
I'm very negative.
I know that the rest of us could try and look on the bright side.
You think
Maz?
I'm negative now? Wait till 6 o'clock.
Darren in Rhode Island on the Bees. Go ahead, Darren.
Hi, Felger. So your Bruins takes are moronic. I want to address them quickly. So on the Morrissey hit, he's a defenseman who comes from the left side of the blue line down to the right side of the goal line, delivers a vicious hit with about 1 second left. He leaves his feet, drives his head into the boards, and you say, yeah, but he turned at the last second, which he did. But I don't see how that makes the rest of it okay.
I also said it was a bad hit, Darren. I mean, it was a bad hit.
And then on the Miller one, I think we can all agree that was a clean hit. And you say that we should expect that call because the Bruins had gotten a couple calls in their favor prior to that. But the two calls in our favor were for the Morrissey hit and then a bench liner for getting...
Do you know what I really hate, Darren?
Wrong.
Let me tell you what I hate more than anything is the ref talk. Like, I mean, do you think you were the better team last night? Do you think you should have won that game because you were clearly the better team?
No, it was a very close game.
Exactly, and it ended 5-4 in a shootout. It ended up exactly being what it should be. So really, at the end of the day, the officiating was not a factor. The team that won should have won, or the result that happened that should have happened, and that happens 99% of the time. So when you call up and bitch about the refs, I just look at you and say, like, you're a bad little league parent. Or, well, I just don't like doing it. I just don't like bitching about refereeing.
So I understand that, but you justify the calls as if they were the right calls, and I don't see how you can do that.
I'm not.
On the Miller one.
They weren't the right call. The Miller one you should, but I'm right in saying you knew it was coming. You knew they were going to call one in their favor after what had just transpired. You knew that was coming.
I don't see why. The two calls were the correct calls, so I don't know why you would expect
the nature of it. You're in their building. The fans all over them. It's an emotional game. There's big penalties in each direction, close calls in each direction. You had just gotten a five-minute major and a 5-on-3 on a disputed offside that went to replay. You knew they were going to give the Jets one. I did. I knew it was coming.
All right, I understand where you're coming from there, but I think you can admit it was the wrong call.
Okay, wrong call. Bad call. I just hate that sort of... Like,
listen, there's nothing I hate more. I've said this.
This is what
times.
The Canadians do. This
in
is
any sport, I hate bitching about the refs.
This is what the Canadians and their fans do. They come out of a game like last night and bitch about the refs when they weren't the better team. This is what Celtics fans do too much. And Tommy Heinsohn and that broadcast does way too much. It's the NBC Sports Boston Celtics broadcast is all about the officiating. Up and down the floor, every trip is about the officiating. I have very little use for it. I'm sorry. It doesn't do anything for me. And I feel like the Bruins broadcast is trending more in that direction by the day. And the persecution complex, oh, they're out to get us. Like that, or you've got the dirtiest player in the league, and so they hold that against you. Maybe that's it.
I'm glad he brought up the bench minor. How did you feel about that challenge by Winnipeg?
So that could have gone either way. Who knows what camera angle they have at the league that we don't see? I mean, I didn't see it on replay. But don't tell me you didn't think that puck was out.
Okay, but my point is there wasn't video to support it.
I thought it went up on edge and left the zone, but no video that we saw showed. I mean, you understand that the NHL has video that we don't see.
Yes.
They have fixed cameras on the blue line and they have fixed cameras in the net that they see that we don't.
Okay, and the call didn't get overturned.
And it didn't. So,
see, to me, that was just a classic one of what was called on the ice was going to stay.
Did you know that it went 5-on-3 if they lost?
Yes, it was a bench minor.
Okay, see, I wasn't sure of that. They were already shorthanded.
That's why I didn't like the challenge.
So that was the extra element there that I went, oh, this is actually stupid because you were down 5-on-3. Because I didn't realize that. I thought if you were already a man down, they wouldn't make you another man down. But no, they do.
It was 3-1. Heinen scored to make it 3-2. And then he decides to challenge it and give the Bruins a 5-on-3. A
lot of risk there.
Donkey. What a dumb move. That was a dumb move. And the Bruins end up scoring right there again, tying the game and then going ahead.
But wham, the refs. I have a hard time with it, folks.
If Cassidy had made that decision and gone down 5-3, we'd be killing him for it. If he opened the door after a 3-1 game became 3-2 and then put the Bruins in a position where they had to defend a 5-on-3,
you and
we would kill him
you
for
and I
it.
Would. You know what the fans would say? Oh, the league's out to screw us. The puck was clearly out of the zone. I mean, that's what it's trending towards, it feels like to me.
Calgary and Mass, the Sports Hub. Is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Am I excited about it? Yeah. Am I nervous about it? Not really. I go back to the WBC. In Puerto Rico, that national team was like the expectations of that team were unreal. And it was either make it to the finals and win it. We didn't win it, but it was making it to the final or bust. And there was a lot of things that I learned just doing that. So, I mean, this is awesome. I mean, I'm the manager of the Boston Red Sox, but at the same time, I think all those experiences helped me to be calm and ready for this challenge.
Maz, why did we play that cut of Alex Cora?
He's still talking about the WBC. For crying out loud, it's driving me bananas. Seriously, it's like that the end of that comment in particular. So the question him, obviously, to Alex Cora was, you know, are you ready for this? Do you think you're ready to be manager of the Red Sox? Are you nervous? Not me. No. No, how could I be nervous? I manage the Puerto Rican team in the WBC. What? Like, look, I know it's a big deal to those Caribbean countries. I'm not dumping on that part of it. I'm not. Okay? But that is a 2-week, 1-month tournament, whatever the hell it is, that nobody watches. Nobody watches. And I don't care. I don't even know how many people are in Puerto Rico, but I'm telling you there are more Red Sox fans than there are people in Puerto Rico. I'm going to state that as fact, given the size of Puerto Rico. And the idea that people in Boston would equate the – would even understand what the hell he's talking about, to me, blows my mind. And then late in the – Jimmy, if we go late in the cut, if we can find that section where he says, I mean, you know, this is great, but what? Like this is your second best job you've ever had? It's your first one, for crying out loud. Managing the WBC team. Oh, my God, it's driving me bananas. I don't want to hear about what he learned in the WBC anymore. I don't want to hear it. This is a totally different animal. 8 months, you know, 6 months of regular season games. You add in spring training. If they make the playoffs, it's a 9-month season, for crying out loud. It is a grind.
Is it scary a little bit that he thinks that that equates, that that's enough?
Yeah, so like, yes, because it couldn't possibly be the same. Again, that tournament lasted for what?
You don't need to tell us.
A month?
The WBC is not Fenway Park every day.
It's not even Kansas City every day.
It's not even in the same universe.
I mean, the whole, you know, the season is designed to break you down. That's what it's about. You play every day. You're around the same people every day. You're going to have losing streaks. He is going to be so sick of Hanley Ramirez by June 15th that he couldn't possibly fathom it at the moment as manager of the Red Sox. It's a totally different thing. Now, maybe the game management part, in some cases, he has a better understanding of because he actually had to manage games or whatever. Fine, I'll take whatever experience you can get there. But the people part of it, the grind part of it, no flipping shot. No shot. That 2 months of the WBC is remotely close.
He keeps bringing that up. Winter ball, being the bench coach. Like, he thinks these things. I just think he's kidding himself.
Oh my gosh, he totally is. Now, look, on some level, I sort of say, well, better that than be afraid of it. Like, I don't want that either. But I do think you have to have a respect for the challenge of managing any big league club, particularly one with the highest payroll in the game and one that's aiming for a World Series. Right? Like, I'm not going to give you the whole Boston thing. If he was managing in a lot of places that had a stacked team, he'd be have the same kind of pressure. If he's managing the Dodgers or the Astros or the Cubs, lots of places where high-paid teams with a lot of talent are expected to win. The WBC, please. It's glorified Little League, if you ask me.
Did you have a second Red Sox thought of the day? Was it J.D. Martinez related?
So I would just say there was a story on ESPN about, you know, Jimmy, was that a poll of players or was that just an assessment of writers?
That was Jim Bowden on The Athletic.
Said that J.D. Martinez is the second best hitter in the league behind Mike
That's
Trout.
Correct.
Is that going a little too far?
You tell me.
I mean, off the top of my head, if I say to you Mike Trout's the best hitter in the league, no one's going to argue. Who's number two? Who pops into your head first? And you can pick any. I'm not telling you there's a right answer.
J.D. Martinez.
So, like, instinctively, I thought I could pick, like, three guys on the Astros, or at least two.
Right, yeah.
Jose Altuve? How about him? You think he's as good a hitter as J.D. Martinez?
Mookie Betts.
How about Carlos Correa? Like, you know.
Lindor on the Indians.
Another one. Like, J.D. Martinez, second best hitter in the league, expectations for this guy are starting to be ridiculous. And so I'm worried about some of the expectations of some of these guys at the beginning of the year. I want to see how it shakes out. That said, of course I'm eager for them to start. You know, once you get to today, to me, you start to feel it. They have the workout in the big league ballpark. Like, they get into a real stadium, and that's what they're doing down there today in Tampa. They take BP. You know, it's sort of... It's almost like the day before a playoff game, right?
Yeah.
Like, you sense that there's a vibe there. And so I'm very much looking forward to it, and I hope to the high heavens that they can stop talking about the freaking WBC.
Okay, add these Red Sox items to our Patriots conversation and our Bruins conversation. Back to it, Frank and Everett, with more complaining about the refs last night. Frank, what do you got?
No, I'm talking about icing, which I hate in hockey. Maybe if they can allow each team four ices per game, and anything over four ices would be a penalty. And also, maybe on the power play, not allow the team to ice the puck to keep the flow of the game going. I just want to know what you guys would think about those two ideas.
Yeah, so they've talked about that, to increase scoring, to eliminate icing on the penalty kill. You got to work your way to the red line like in a normal situation. I'm all for that. I'm all for that. I think that used to be the way it was for years, and then it was either the 70s Canadians. There was a Canadians team, I think, that changed all that, or maybe the Oilers. Like, it used to be you couldn't ice the puck on the power play. And if you just, Jimmy, are you listening to me? Jimmy Murray? Can you Google something?
Sure. What are you looking for?
NHL icing. And on the power play, find out what year they instituted you were allowed to ice the puck on the power play. It used to be icing. And then they said, no, you can ice the puck because it was either the 70s Canadians or maybe the 80s Oilers that was so dominant. They said, well, no, you're now allowed to ice the puck. Either way, I'm in favor of that one. I hate the new icing. I always like the touch-up icing, even though you can't touch the guy. There was something about that race to the puck that I liked. I hate that they eliminated that little play in the game. Hate it. I like the touch-up icing. I don't like this dot icing. We just have to get to the dots. But I thought he was going to bitch about the Morrow goal last night, where the Nesson crew, of course, was bitching that it should have been an icing call. And I think Cassie was bitching about that as well. It rimmed around the boards, and Krug was down there, and it should have been called an icing, but they waved it off. And my question was, doesn't the player have to get below the dots for that to be icing? And Krug sort of stopped at the dots, and I thought Krug made a mistake by not skating below the dots to get the icing call. He sort of half-assed it a little bit on that. But maybe I have that wrong. Maybe I have that wrong. I'll admit that up front. But that's what I thought, because that was another bitch that they had last night. It's all just bitching about the refs now. It's all just bitching about the ref and the league not giving us the calls, and the league's out together not protecting us with hits, and all that it is.
Clearly, Jack and Brick just want to win our Felger and Maz Twitter poll about the most homer broadcast in the market.
They have a long way to go. They're 40 points behind Tommy and Mike.
That was a runaway.
I'm sorry, guys.
They're trying to catch up.
Here's Brendan.
It's going to be like the Reagan election, for crying out loud.
Brendan in Randolph. Go ahead, Brendan.
Hey, I was just talking about Johnny Manziel. I don't really think that I would really want him in our system. I know he has the talent and everything, but I just think that if we were to get someone more reliable that's already proved themselves in the league,
guys, I've cut you off. Like, what? Who cares about the backup? Let Brian Hoyer be the backup. Brian Hoyer is a fine backup. In fact,
I think he's a good backup.
Yeah, me too.
I liked him when he was here the first time.
The backup, unless it's Garoppolo, unless it's the young guy that's ready to take the job, the backup to me should have someone with NFL experience who could go in and manage things. And that's Hoyer. I think you're fine there this year. What we're talking about is the next guy. So is Manziel worth taking a shot on as the next guy? And I say, why not? And his off-field stuff to me is not a risk, because you cut him the first second you see a whiff of smoke anywhere around him. Bye-bye. So no problem there. I think the only risk is, and it's not even a risk, but you're wasting your time because he can't play. That's it. That is just a waste of your time because he'll never be an NFL quarterback. He's not big enough. Doesn't throw the ball well enough. He can't sit in the pocket where he doesn't have the poise or the intel. You know, he just doesn't have it. So why would we waste our time? That's the only risk.
What about the offense?
Meaning? You have to change the offense for him?
Yeah.
Oh, well, they ain't doing that.
Oh, no, I guarantee you they would change the offense. Don't you have to change the offense?
They would move him a little bit, but what, do you think all of a sudden it's going to be some sort of read option offense?
Oh, I wouldn't rule that out.
Oh, no way. You can't do that. There's no way they're doing that.
Don't you have to build the offense around your quarterback?
Then see you later, Johnny. Well, no, but not if he's a read option quarterback.
Well, I'm just telling you, it's not going to be the offense they have now.
No, it won't be, but you still got to sit in the pocket and throw the ball. Sorry. When did they institute this new NHL icing, Jimmy? Did you find that?
Looks like 2005?
No.
Well,
good God.
Then I don't know what the hell you're looking
2005.
For. 2005? Well, you asked the question in about 52 words.
Right, that's a hard thing to Google.
It's tough to Google 52 words.
They eliminated the touch-up icing, maybe in 05, but it was even way after that. What are you talking about, 05?
I don't know what the hell you're looking for. Just do it yourself when I do the headlines, then.
The touch-up icing. Jimmy Stewart's just giving you a high five. You want belly bump still? You want to come and give him the high five for
I'd love to, because the computer in front of you is just so hard to use the Google machine.
It's hard to talk and Google at the same time.
I put
time.
About seven different permutations of when did they change icing in the NHL with power play. Power play change of icing in NHL. And the only thing that really came up in 2005, the NHL modified the icing rule to state that the five players on the ice for the offending team must remain on the ice for the subsequent faceoff. Is that what you're looking for?
Nope, nothing,
clearly
to,
not.
Nothing to do with the power play.
No, that's
nothing.
Not it, no.
Bertrand
no.
does it all the time during the middays.
And the touch-up was instituted just a couple years ago, which I hate, or the elimination of the touch-up icing. You used to get called for icing when you ice the puck on the power play, and then there was one dominant team in the league that was so freaking dominant on the power play, the league said, forget it, ice the puck on the power play, because otherwise LaFleur is going to score three goals every two-minute power play that you give him. I think, but maybe I have this
it's
all
wrong. It's not even that Wikipedia entry either. I looked there, too.
Honestly, I don't ever remember that. As long as I can remember, you dump the puck down there on a power play. I mean, you could ice when you were shorthanded.
Okay, the true hockey Christian, maybe I dreamt this. Maybe this was
likely
some sort of nonsense that came into my head in an acid flashback
happened
or something.
So often.
Okay.
It's probably right there with the asteroid dream.
But old-time hockey Christianists, put in your teeth and give me the answer on this thing. Did they used to call icing on the power play?
Not that I remember.
Okay. Here's an update from Murray, and then we're back with more.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
15 seconds to go. Tyler Myers cross ice. Brian Little to Myers out high. Uses the big reach. Goes back to the forehand. And here's motion with the game on his stick. 4 seconds to go. Across Central Canada and throughout New England are full of hockey fans. They will decide it on a skills contest tonight.
That was a good watch. And I called it a playoff preview because that's what it's going to feel like every other night, starting in the spring. Hopefully for several weeks. But that's what it feels like. The back and forth, the controversial calls, the close calls, getting screwed, getting pissed. Now you have a Bruins team that can actually pick a corner and come back. Which is unbelievable. They are at times unrecognizable to me, Miss.
Not at times. I told you I had this revelation about 2 weeks ago. I said, where are the Bruins and what have you done with them?
They get on a power play and they've got, you know, Heinen off the post, Krug in the upper corner, like passing like a million miles an hour from the high slot. It's like that Donato goal is just like, who are you people?
I'm telling you, they play like a highly skilled European team. I like it. I think they're playing great hockey.
Of course they are. But anyway.
But I mean, I like the style of it. Like, you know, for years, growing up, all you saw was the Bruins put a bunch of plumbers out there, a bunch of freaking butchers on skates, dump the puck in, slap people around, and try to bank one in off someone's ass. That was the whole That was the whole plan. You know, we're just going to outwork you. We're going to bring our lunch play on our toolbox, and we are going to work hard, and we're going to win the game. But they would always fall short because they didn't have enough talent and skill.
So last night was fabulous. Back and forth, comebacks. You can actually hit the back of the net now. Any controversial calls, the league's out to get you. They won't protect your players. You're getting run. The league won't suspend them. Why is that? Close calls back and forth all night last night, so it was just a terrific night. So we've been talking about that. The Zdeno Chara extension, how do you feel about that? Apparently my thing about they used to let you ice the puck on the power play never existed. That came to me in some sort of acid dream. I'm sorry. There's some, maybe I was thinking of the WHA, the World Hockey Association, did not used to let you ice the puck on the power play.
Could be that.
So maybe it was the WHA.
I mean, you were enough of a hockey junkie as a kid to watch that stupid-ass league.
And maybe Gretzky would score 3 goals a power play and they were going to change it, or they did. Like, I don't know. I don't know why that was in my head that they used to do that. But the WHA did. So maybe that's what I was thinking about. I don't know.
All right, so here's...
Go find it, though, Murray!
The 70s-era World Hockey Association never adopted the NHL rule of allowing shorthanded teams to ice the puck. Huh? Is that maybe what you're looking for? I really don't know.
Does this qualify as when hosts aren't listening?
No, I don't think so at all.
Well,
no,
I'm just looking for any answer.
Yeah, uh-huh. Thank you.
And then another guy texted to say, let's see, they changed it to 5-on-5. There was 4-on-4 matching penalties, but the Oilers scored so often, they changed it to 5-on-5. Icing's always been allowed on power play. Hybrid started in 13-14.
Yeah, hybrid can kiss my ass. I hate this hybrid.
Oh,
I,
so maybe that's what it was. And then matching penalties, you still play 5-on-5.
Right, matching, no, they used to go 4-on-4, and no, then maybe it was an Oilers thing. Maybe it was a Gretzky Oilers thing. They said, well, screw this. You can't let Curry, Gretzky, Messier, Coffey, you know, like, it was, I don't know. But
right, you give those guys that much ice.
But anyway, there you go. Everything on the board here for you to peruse. Pete in Essex, what's your Bruins thought?
Mass, $3.6 million in Puerto Rico. what do I care if a Winnipeg Jet or a St. Louis Blue gets suspended at this point in the season? What does that do for me?
Thank you.
Now, if a Lightning, a Leafs, Taylor Hall, Claude Giroux gets suspended for 5 games in a week, that might do something for me. But the only suspension I'm focused on right now are ones to my own team or an Eastern playoff team. What difference does a Western team? We're done with the West now. Everything from here on to the Stanley Cup.
It's just a chance to cry about the officials, which I just can't stand. It's like, they gave back his 3. How come they don't give this guy Morrissey anything? Like, it's that thing.
What does it get you?
I know.
You're never seeing those teams again. Stop crying. It's over. The Jets fans should care if there was a meeting today. What are you going to do? You're going to cry to the league? Oh, that'll get you something next time, huh?
So, I mean, I thought it was egregious.
Tell you what, it's a great point, though.
What's that?
What's the benefit to the Bruins if the guy gets suspended?
There's none.
You don't get it. It's not like you're in the NHL finals and the defenseman of Vancouver who hit Nathan Horton that year. Remember that?
Yes.
And he got bounced. That was justice.
Yeah.
Right? That was justice. What?
Free book for anyone who can remember his name.
Aaron Rome?
I was going to say Rome.
Rome. Yeah.
I still know who it is, but I don't know.
Sounds right. But you know, to me, like in that scenario, you say, okay, you're in a series. You know, you're in the finals. Their guy took out your guy. He should sit too. Fine. That's justice. In this, what good's it going to do? You're not playing him again tomorrow.
Brandon in Maine on Johnny Manziel. You want him?
Yeah. No. No, absolutely. No part of that bomb. Maz, you're suffering from, like, Garoppolo traumatic stress disorder. Let me kind of reset you guys' expectations.
Might
here.
Be true, yeah.
He's Jay Cutler-like. He doesn't have the arm, quite the arm as Jay Cutler has. He's not as tall as Jay Cutler, and he makes Jay Cutler look like he has a work ethic. At that kind of position, coming off that kind of dysfunctional offseason that the Patriots just had, where they're having trouble keeping guys focused even in the offseason, I don't know if that's a guy you want on your team. And
I mean, I hear you on paper. I'm just going to cut you off. The off-field thing doesn't worry me because if he's a problem, he's gone.
So he brings up an interesting point, though. How would Brady react to it?
Oh, he wouldn't even care.
At this point, do you think he cares?
I don't know. I'm asking. I you know, I mean, is Johnny...
Well, what are you driving at? That Brady looks at him and goes, you punk.
Maybe. Like, is Manziel enough of a name that Brady would get irritated by it?
No. Nobody's a legitimate threat for him to lose his job or have Bill move on from him at this point. And now that he won, because Garoppolo's gone, he's got nobody even to worry about, no matter who they bring in or draft.
No, you're probably right. I'm thinking out loud. You know, Manziel's... He's not your typical, you know, bring him in kind of guy. Like, Brady feels like a little bit of a tight ass about his job. I'm not blaming him.
I think that we talked about this the other day. I think you hit it perfectly in 2014 with Jimmy Garoppolo. It was just the right age for Brady, 36, 37. Just the perfect age. Now, Brady sees the finish line himself, and he's even talking about it. So, as Brady's concerned, yeah, I'm bringing the next guy. I only got a couple years anyway. So I don't think it works anymore. I think that motivating Tom Brady thing, ship has sailed. It's done.
Well, you really think, but I don't know. I wonder if Brady looks at this guy and goes, wow, you think so little of me now that you're bringing in this a-hole? you guys are probably right, Murray. I don't know what to tell you. I just wonder, like, this is a different kind of a-hole. Like, this isn't Garoppolo. This guy's a bipolar alcoholic, like...
Special kind of a-hole.
Yeah, yeah. What'd you say again? How did you describe him earlier? What was the phrase? A rich, spoiled little a-hole?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's great. In fact, I'm starting to think they should do it just to piss Brady off.
All right, long commercial segment is next.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mez.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5. The Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. I don't know what's going on. Morrissey's a defenseman. You know, what's he jumping on his feet on another defenseman like that? I don't like that hit at all. End of the period, you want to talk about situational?
Yeah.
That's garbage. It's garbage right there. I mean, going to hit him? Stay low. He elevates from behind.
Bill Jaffe last night on Nesson. On that Morrissey hit, that will not be fined, not be suspended, not even a call. And again, that's one of the takeaways, too. Like, you watch these games on Nesson, and they must be watching a different game than the league, because the Bruins are getting hit with these hits, and the Nesson crew is losing their mind. Like, this is an outrage. This is disturbing. The league has to look at it. That's garbage last night. The thing was, the other night in Dallas, Jamie Benn hitting Brad Marchand. This is disturbing. League doesn't even look at it. Last night, it's garbage. Something's got to happen. Jack's talking about, well, the fans better cheer him now because they won't be seeing him for a while. The league doesn't even call. So someone's saying, you tell me who's farther from the center, who's farther from the truth, the TV broadcast or the league? But they must be watching totally different games because there are hits that happen in the game that are just, again, outrage, moral outrage. And the league doesn't even bother making a call on it. So you tell me. Something's not adding up there on that front.
Oh, no, look, they've been, they're going off the deep end. Maybe they're sort of undergoing the same thing that everybody else in Boston is. And what I mean by that is, people have really started to believe in this team now. It took a long, and the closer you get, the more amped up you get. The reality is that they got a shot.
And it's all great. We're all engaged now. Like, this pisses you off, that pisses you off. This is unfair. That's right. So we're all sort of like engaged now. It's great.
I love the makeup of that team. And when I say the makeup of it, the personality of it, like, they are freaking relentless. How many times have they gone into the third period this year losing by multiple goals and come back in either one or tie?
Unbelievable. And again, especially the way that second period ended with that Morrissey hit. And you said, I'm like, okay, let's see. They've done this all year. They've responded. They go on the 5-minute power play, boom, tie it up.
Like, they got an extra 2 minutes out of it because of the challenge, and they scored again. And then they get the fourth goal, and went up 4-3.
Yeah, but you shouldn't have. You weren't shocked by that, I hope. I mean, it's been 3 months we're going on this.
Not shocked, but just another night where it's like, okay, let's see. We could easily go in the other direction. Last game of a road trip, backup goalie's in there. You're down 2 goals. Like, pack it up. See you back in Boston. I mean, that you think a Claude Julien team the last couple of years has any...
I know we're a full calendar year into Bruce Cassidy, but with the way that they've played the last 3 months, I now expect... They're down 3-1. I'm like, oh, they'll come back. Believe me, under Claude? Oh, no, that second period ends. I shut it off. I'm like, we're good here. I know how this ends.
I'll tell you what. I am still half waiting for, I don't want to say the bottom to come out because that's too strong. I think they're good. But I just think, it just can't... I don't think it can last. I hope I'm wrong. They are great to watch.
What a run. Me and this Furkacta icing thing. I've been on this, so I got to close it. I know what I was talking about now. I know it because of our intern, Jarrett. Jarrett, come on the mic. And I'm sorry for calling you Garrett. I'm not great with names, but that was pretty damn close.
Jarrett.
Come on, Jarrett. Where are you?
Jarrett, get on the mic.
Jarrett, get on the mic.
Screening your precious phone call.
Oh, he's on the horn.
Well, don't get mad at me now. He's just so mad.
Started early this week.
Okay, so fine. Jared told me, and people have called in on this, what I was thinking of.
Hang up on the caller, Jared.
Here's what they used to...
Felger will shortly, so why not?
The league used to keep the guy in the box for the full 2 minutes, whether you scored or not. And then, with the Canadians in the 50s, the Richard Canadians, they dominated the power play so much, they said, no, when you score, come back on the ice. So what they used to do they were two-minute majors, if you will. No matter what, you stayed in the box for the full 2 minutes.
The Canadians would get like five goals.
Right. And so they said, oh, yeah, enough of this. You score, you come out of the box. That's what I was thinking of.
Of course, the Bruins never proposed the rule change because they didn't score, period.
No, exactly.
No wonder I couldn't find it, because you were off by three decades.
Yes. Yeah. Not, well, not only 3 decades. I was thinking of a completely different
team.
Rule. No, a completely different
rule.
Facet of the rule, yes.
Yeah, yeah, completely different element.
So I had you Googling the wrong thing. I'm now going to go back to the phones, including the gentleman that Jarrett so nicely put on the board and that Jimmy protected. Here's Joe in Dorchester on Johnny Manziel. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, guys. Maz, I think you hit it right on the head when you said that Bill Belichick is exactly the coach this guy needs. I mean, the guy went to a dumpster fire in Cleveland, and Mike Pettine had no idea where he was. He's out there wearing a fake mustache the night before a game. If this guy can get his head on straight, guys, I know I'm a Manziel honk like Murray. I love those two Alabama games. But I think the talent is really there because, unlike Tebow, this guy can throw the ball. Now, you can say, Felger, his mechanics aren't great, but they can work with him on that. I just think that the arm strength's there, the athleticism's there, and if he can get his head on straight, he could do something for this team in the future.
Why not? God bless. And I didn't say his mechanics are bad. I said they're just, I think the ball comes out better with Garoppolo. I think Garoppolo, and again, this, you know, I did say, even as a backup, like that's an NFL release that Garoppolo has. He just does. And I don't know why and how or where he got there, or if it's God-given or what, but just the way it comes out is just NFL caliber. I don't feel that way when I watch Manziel. I feel like he's a littler guy who sort of has to work to get his velocity and get the thing out. But what do you the only thing you have to lose, like I said before, is that he just can't do it. He's just not good enough, and if you try and bring him in, you're just wasting your time. It's just your time. That's all. We've got Chris in California. Hi, Chris. What do you think?
Hey, Felger. Hey, I just want to insert some logic into this whole Johnny Manziel thing. I mean, we need to look at the stats here. Career passing rating for Johnny Manziel, 74.4%, under 1,700 yards, 7 TDs in 10 games. And I'm not saying Hoyer's the second coming of Brady as a backup, but at least he's in the 80 percentile. He's got 10,000 yards, 48 TDs in 60 games. You just look at the body of work. Furthermore, you need to build through the draft. I mean, hope isn't a strategy. Johnny Football is not going to be a strategy. You need to look at Lamar Jackson, Mason Rudolph, Kyle Luletta as possible prospects that you can build through.
And that's what I think they're doing. I'm just going to cut you off quickly. That's what I think they're doing. But Manziel's sitting there for free. Why not take a look?
Oh, to me, you do both. Like, I'm not saying one or the other. I'm not saying Johnny Manziel in lieu of a draft selection. No, you bring Manziel. In fact, it's a great way to even create competition if Manziel takes it seriously. Like,
for the guy that you draft.
Right, exactly. If you're going to draft the guy in the second round, bring in Manziel, too, and say, hey, kid, don't think you're just the guy now. Like, we're going to have someone else here breathing down your neck. And it's not a perfect apples to apples, but it's along the lines of what the Redskins did with RG3, right? They also drafted Cousins in the same draft in the fourth round. So now look, as it turned out, Cousins was the guy. But to me, that's what they should do now. Garoppolo was one pick, bring him in, let's see what we got. And then if it didn't look right, maybe you take another guy the next year. Now if I'm them, go get a guy off the street like Manziel and draft one and let's see. You got to get one now.
Here's someone who I guarantee doesn't appreciate the NHL officiating, Mike in Woburn. Go ahead, Mikey.
Hey, Mikey, just wanted to just check in with you, make sure you're okay. What's the satellite watch right now?
Where is there an update?
I would figure that you would have this like programmed into your phone.
No. Well, they don't know where it is or when it's going to come down, so why should I try and track it? They can't track it.
April.
Yeah, it's in April anyway. They say. They think.
And it's the size of Massachusetts.
Right, what I think we need to do is we need to get the linesman that called that first goal on it. Because if he can see that puck go in from outside the blue line, then he'll be able to spot that Chinese satellite from, you know, Mount Washington. That to me is like, we can get mad about the hit and there being no supplemental discipline. For the most part, I think Parros has done a pretty good job this season, and it's sort of what I would think would happen when you have an enforcer running player safety is that he's going to give, we'll say, borderline plays from guys who don't have a history the benefit of a doubt,
but
come down hard on guys like Marchand. I mean, you don't want to hear it, but that's what's going to happen. But the goal call, that drives me crazy because it wasn't a goal on the ice. Then they have that little huddle. I don't know if they, like, you know, what's in the water bottles, Daron Harmon sweet tea or something like that. But Like, where did they get? Where did they decide that it went in? Because nobody signaled it.
I know. So, I think you know what I think that was. I think that was crowd influenced.
Yeah, that was exactly. And then they get on the horns of the league. Now, here's my thing that I've been championing for years. Whenever there's communication with the league, I want to hear it. I want to hear what they're saying and how they're reviewing it. They do it in other sports. I want to hear it. I want to hear it in hockey. And I want to hear it definitely now in football because Lord knows what that conversation was when they were reviewing that third quarter touchdown.
So Mike, you're a big rugby guy. They do this in rugby, right?
Yes, they call it a TMO, TV match official. And the ref on the field talks to him. You can hear it. You can hear the communication. And the ref on the field is also watching the replay on the big screen. So there's nothing that's hidden from the paying customer.
And I'll tell you, and I'm just going to cut you off because we're up against top of the hour. That's wonderful programming. Like, wouldn't that be fascinating to listen into?
Oh, it'd be great. I'll tell you what I think happened last night is that they didn't know. And as they're skating out to center ice, they said, well, you know what?
No. They show a replay on the board, and the crowd is like, ah! And when they get in that huddle, they say, okay, goal.
Well, see, I think it's one of those that they said, call the goal, and then we'll have it reviewed. And if it's not, they'll reverse it. Almost like the NFL would encourage you to say it's a touchdown because it would get automatic review.
Well, they could do the same thing. I think it gets automatically reviewed even if it's not a goal.
Is that right?
I think so. I could be wrong. I'm not sure. But maybe you're right. I think it was just the crowd there is such a factor that I think that they got the refs like an NBA game.
I just felt like as the officials were skating up the ice talking to one another, the couple of them there, that they said, let's call it a goal and then see what happens.
Okay, we got all that Bruins stuff on the board, that fabulous night of hockey last night, all of our Bruins, Patriots stuff on the board. You want Johnny Manziel? These guys do. We all do. Why not? What the hell? Take a shot. That's on the board, Maz. You can't stand that Alex Cora keeps bringing in the World Baseball Classic as his experience here to excel in Boston. Opening day is tomorrow, so if you want to slip in some Red Sox thoughts, of course, you're welcome here. All to you. After the update here, 90 seconds, no commercials.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.